Welcome to the Florida Roundup, the statewide edition today. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, Tom, it was a surprise announcement that dropped on Black Friday. As well-known Orlando attorney and medical marijuana activist John Morgan said he's leaving the Democratic Party. Morgan now says if he does decide to run for governor, as many had expected him to do, it will be as an independent. Morgan is known around the state for his TV ads and, of course, that famous tagline of his, for the people.
He's also known for using his millions to get medical marijuana on the ballot here in Florida. Amendment 2 passed last November in large part due to his efforts, Melissa.
That's right, Tom. Now Morgan says that although he wants to make an impact in politics, he's really just become disillusioned with both parties. His announcement is seen as a major blow to Democratic hopes in the state. Morgan has been a major fundraiser for the Democratic Party over the years. We're going to discuss it all right now as we're pleased to welcome John Morgan. He's on the line from Orlando. Thanks so much for being on the Florida Roundup.
It's good to be with you guys.
And the number to connect with John Morgan, 305-995-1800, as we talk about your bombshell announcement saying you're leaving the Democratic Party, you're disenchanted with both parties. Let me begin by asking you, we've heard that both that you're ruling out a run for Florida governor and that you might still run as an independent. Have you come to a decision? What is your plan?
I have no plans other than to get my signatures started to get being gathered to raise the minimum wage to $10 the first year and over the next 6 years after that to $15 an hour. So that's my real focus right now.
Are you ruling out then completely ruling out a run for governor as an independent candidate?
I'm not ruling out anything. I don't know what's going to happen between now and January 1, so I'm not ruling out anything. It just happened like this. After we passed the marijuana amendment, 71% of the people said yes, and Ben Pallera floated the idea, John Morgan for governor. I didn't even think a thing about it. In the course of a year, I was out of the state most of the time this year. I made 5 speeches. That was it. I tweeted a few times. And by November, I was leading in the polls. Most of these people who run for office have spent their entire adult life, if not their high school years, dreaming about running for a certain office. And so I was really not prepared for this to have happened the way it did. I was getting 40, 50, 60 request a month to give a speech or come somewhere, and I just had to put the brakes on because my situation is different from theirs. Most politicians have really never had a job or are retired. I have lots and lots of businesses. The unwinding, the stopping would be complicated, and so I thought for now it was best for me to give all the other candidates a chance to go get traction, to go catch on fire, and for me to focus on what is most important to me, which is a living wage for Floridians.
So, John, just to be clear, you're not saying no to a 2018 gubernatorial race. You're just saying not right now.
I'm saying not right now, and I'm saying, you know, running as an independent I think would be hard because people, all the experts tell me that an independent has no chance. Mm. Of winning.
Why do you think why do you think that if minimum wage and raising the living wage in Florida is your premier issue right now, why do you think the best way to affect that change is through a constitutional amendment, gathering the petition signatures, going through the process to get the language approved by the system and putting it on the ballot in the state of Florida versus running for governor and affecting that kind of policy as a platform as the chief executive officer of the state?
Because I would still have to have the Republicans who control both houses put this into law. The Republican Party is bought and paid for by big business. And the bigger the business, the more money. That's why what you're seeing in Washington today, all these people who voted for this Republican control. They thought their houses were going to get better, that their families were going to be better. Just the opposite is happening. The people who make between $30,000 and $70,000 a year, the ones going to be hurt the most. The rich are going to get richer, the poor are going to get poorer, the sick are going to get sicker, and it's because they voted for a promise that's never going to come. So as governor, even as governor, I would still have to have the Florida Republicans vote this into law. Now, if I'm moving forward with my amendment and I was governor, I could say to them, look, you can either do it legislatively, which I would prefer, you know, let's put a number in, let's put an index, and let it happen there. But they're not going to do it because, you know, the big donors want slave labor. There's nothing that can make your business more profitable than slave or inexpensive labor.
And we'll talk more about the minimum wage push. Attorney John Morgan is trying to get on the ballot, just as he did with the medical marijuana initiative, in just a minute. The number to join the Florida Roundup anywhere in the state is 305-995-1800. Let me ask you, John Morgan, you've been very critical of the Republican Party over the years. You have been very well known as one of the state's most prominent Democrats. You're leaving the Democratic Party, though. You've become disenchanted with the Democrats as well. Why is that?
Well, first of all, you know, my whole life I've raised money for both parties. I have raised millions of dollars for Republicans in my living room. I'm a person who doesn't believe anything can get done if you don't know each other and you don't like each other and you're not open to compromise. So over the years, you know, I'm hosting a party for Bill Galvano, the incoming state Senate president this year. We're going to do another one for him in December. So while I have been a Democrat and have hosted a lot of Democrats in my home, I've hosted a lot of Republicans, and not just, you know, I've hosted, you know, many speak Dean Cannon and Chris Dorworth, and the list goes on and on. Jeff Kottkamp was the lieutenant governor of state of Florida. He was a Morgan and Morgan lawyer. We raised a lot of money when he ran for his offices and when he ran for lieutenant governor. I'm disenchanted with both of them because I don't believe any of them care about anything except their next election. They don't give a damn about their next door neighbor. It's all about winning. And I've watched both parties, these political hacks, these dirty tricksters, these people who are, you know, wanting to make money off of the process, and I'm just not going to send money to an apparatus that is made up of people that I wouldn't hire to you know, wash tires.
John, what was the moment? What was the straw, though, that broke your back? Not only as a Democrat, but as you mentioned, you have been a fundraiser for both parties. You have been highly engaged in the political process in the state of Florida for many, many years, financially and otherwise, part of that system that you are now repudiating.
I'll tell you, one of the straws, I don't think, it's like a tipping point. A snowflake can cause an avalanche, but it's a buildup of the snow. And I will tell you, one of the moments was I backed Hillary Clinton. She was at my home twice. Bill Clinton was my home once. I raised about $3 million for her. When I look at politicians, I don't really worry about their personalities. I want to know who's going to be driving the jet, who's most equipped to drive the plane. If I'm going to have surgery, I don't care about bedside manner. I want the best surgeon. And I believed in that last election that Hillary Clinton would have been better than Donald Trump. By the way, you know, before he dropped out, my wife had scheduled a time for Jeb Bush to come to our house, and we were going to raise a bunch of money for him, because he's one of my heroes in Florida. But one of the moments for me with the Democratic Party, even though I was a supporter of Hillary, is that the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz were stacking the deck, rigging the deal against Bernie Sanders. It started with the debate schedule. It got into the database. Mm-hmm. And before it was all over, even though they didn't have to do it, it reminded me of Watergate. It reminded me of, why is Nixon breaking into the Democratic headquarters. He doesn't have to do it. Why is Debbie Wasserman Schultz stacking the deck against Bernie Sanders? And I believe that what that did when it finally came out was it made the Bernie Sanders people who were already highly motivated, really motivated. And most recently, my suspicions were confirmed in the Donna Brazile book.
Yeah, in the hacked book that she just published. Yeah.
Let me ask you, John, and John, lots of people.
That bothered me. That bothered me. Cheating bothers me. Well, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz was looking for a position because she's dead. You know, she's dead in the water now. And if Hillary had won, it would have.
And let me just follow up, John, by saying, is being a political independent where your heart is? Is that where your politics are?
Yes. My heart is this. You know what I loved? 71% of Florida agreed with me on one issue, which was medical marijuana. That gave me hope. Now, one of the things that people will write about is like, you know, don't support this. Barack Obama was at his house. That was a knock against the medical marijuana. I don't want that to be a distraction because I truly am an independent thinker. I truly am an independent person. I truly do vote for both Democrats and Republicans, the best person, the best man, the best woman. And it was just for me, psychologically, a good jumping off point to go forward. Look, I'm 61 years old. I'm probably in the last quarter of my life. And for me, I want to go from success to significance, and I want to do it in the way I want to do it, and I don't want to have a label on me going forward.
All right, and the number to join the Florida Roundup is Attorney John Morgan kicks off our show this Friday and says he's not going to run for governor as a Democrat anyway. The number to join us, 305-995-1800. Let's begin with Daryl. He's on the line from St. Augustine. Hey, Daryl, you're on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Morgan, for all the great work. I know it's not easy to buck the system. I too am independent. I vote for whoever I think is the best person, not the best party. So your thinking, I think, is right in line with so many true Americans that are red, white, and blue, not just red and not just blue.
Thank you.
As far as Mr. Trump, I think Mr. Trump is the greatest gift to independents and the Democratic Party because he is basically a disease within that party, and it truly reveals that they represent sexism, racism, communism. You know, now it's pedophilia. They will vote for anybody,
Daryl,
power.
Daryl, it's Tom. And let me ask you, Daryl, and John, you a question as well about being an independent voter here in the state of Florida. First of all, both to Daryl and to John, are you registered independents? No party affiliation?
Yes.
I am not. I'm still registered. I only have made this decision, you know, less than a week, so I've not gone to change my affiliation yet.
Will you change that affiliation, John?
I probably will the only thing I worry about, and I got to think it through, is you don't get to vote in primary.
Well, that's why I'm asking. Yeah. I'm leading the witness here, counsel, trying to get to that point.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I know you are.
Daryl, you mentioned you're not affiliated with a political party in Florida. That means that you can participate in a primary, but when you go to your voting place this coming up in 2018 with the U.S. Senate race and the gubernatorial race, you won't see the major party candidates on your ballot because you're a non-party affiliate.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I find that to be just another example of manipulation and exclusion by both parties. I find it disgusting. It's not representative. It's not American. It's everything anti the voting. I will probably sign up for one party or another just to be able to do that. I've never done that in the past, but it's become apparent that if you don't do that, then your choices for actual leaders later on becomes extremely limited.
All right. Thanks for that call, Daryl. Let's go now live to Steve in Homestead. Just a second, John. I want to get this caller on for you. It's Steve in Homestead. Steve, go ahead quickly.
Hi, my name is Stephen McDuffie, former state GOP college Republican chairman. I left the party and I became an independent because I'm sick and tired of both the Democratic and the Republican parties and the way they have made our politics so divisive. I truly respect people that publicly serve. I've ran for office before, and I just want people to give a damn about their neighbors, like Mr. Morgan said.
All right, thanks for that, Steve.
And I agree, and he makes a great point. When Barack Obama was elected, the first thing that Mitch McConnell said is, our number one goal is to defeat him. The moment that Donald Trump was elected, there was calls for his impeachment immediately. These two parties don't care anything about anything except their own power.
Let me ask you, John Morgan, as a follow-up about the, before we go back to the callers, John Morgan, you're really pushing for this living wage amendment to appear on the ballot. Of course, you were successful with getting medical marijuana on the ballot and using a lot of your own money to do it. And as you pointed out, it passed decisively. Now, your big push now is to get the state's living wage up to $15 an hour. I know in recent
days,
and you've pushed back against criticism of in recent days about employees of your own firm that make less than that, like $11 or $12 an hour. What about that criticism?
Well, first of all, my amendment, if it passes, would go into effect in 2021. The first year would be $10. The second year would be $11, $12, $13, $14, $15. There are some, I have like 2,500 people that work at Morgan Morgan. There are some entry-level positions at $11 and $12 an hour. Once they go off probation, they get a raise. And a lot of those $12 an hour people who get a raise are also in the call center, and they receive on average, $6,000 a year in bonuses. The reporter who did that report, he didn't want to hear the facts. He told me he was going to come back and sit with me. I said, I'll let you sit with my HR people and my finance people. He did the story without hearing the facts. He didn't want to hear the facts.
And well, so we appreciate you putting that out there. We're about to go to break, but really quickly, you're leaving the door open to an independent run for governor, correct?
Correct.
All right. He's attorney John Morgan on the line from Orlando. He's not running for governor, Tom, as a Democrat, but we'll definitely have to stay posted on this one. Hope you'll come back on the show, John.
Thank you all for having me. And I'm glad we got to finally do this.
Yeah, thank you. And you're listening to the Florida Roundup, statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. We want your calls from anywhere in the state. Much more to come. Keep listening. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, statewide edition. Get on the line from anywhere in the state and join the conversation with us at 305-995-1800. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Let's talk about the state and sex. Melissa, the annual state law writing session begins in about a month in Tallahassee, and the talk of the capital city is all about sexual harassment. A Republican senator and gubernatorial hopeful Jack Latvala has been accused by six women of harassment. One of those came forward publicly this week. Rachel Perrine Rogers is an aide to the Senate Majority Leader in Tallahassee. She filed a formal complaint against Latvala early last month. This is Governor Rick Scott this week.
If the allegations are true, he needs to resign.
But Latvala hasn't quit. Instead, his attorney released more than 200 text messages between Latvala and Rogers. Among other things, she asked the state lawmaker to help her stepfather get out of jury duty. Meanwhile, over the past 25 years, we've learned that state taxpayers, Tom, have paid out some $11 million to settle more than 300 sexual harassment claims against state workers. Now, That tally doesn't even include a payment to avoid a sexual harassment complaint against a lawmaker way back in the late 1980s. That was a significant one as well. So here's our question to callers. What do you make of your tax money being used to settle these accusations of bad behavior by state employees? And what do you want to know about the sexual harassment scandal in the Capitol? Give us a call at 305-995-1800 as we welcome Gary Finout, reporter with the Associated Press in Tallahassee. And Gary, what about this salvo from Latvala releasing hundreds of text messages sent by the aide to the Senate Majority Leader who has publicly accused him? What do you make of that?
Well, it was a very interesting decision for them to go ahead and release that information, and I'm sure there's some sort of strategy related to it. I'm sure people could speculate as to what is going on. I mean, the investigation that is going on with Senator Latvala is basically there's a special master. They're going to get information. They've already gotten information from Ms. Rogers in terms of her statement and what she says happened in several instances with the senator. And that will go to the Rules Committee, and then the Rules Committee Chairman, Senator Beniquisto, and that committee is going to have to make a decision as to whether or not they feel that the allegations warrant any type of sanctions, which, you know, can range from just a reprimand all the way to possible expulsion.
And this woman, Rachel Perrin Rogers, the aide to the Senate Majority Leader, her allegations against Latvala really mirror the allegations so many other women have made: inappropriate behavior, inappropriate touching, groping. The release of the text messages, so often when women come forward, everything they've ever said or done, everything in their past history is publicized as a way to somehow discredit them. That is so often why women don't come forward, because everything in their past is hauled out for the public to pore over. It seems as though that's what's being done here to this woman in the release of these text messages, which show that she had tried to cultivate a collegial relationship with this powerful leader in Tallahassee over the years.
Well, let's understand something about Tallahassee and that probably is not as self-evident to people who are living in a let's say a more cosmopolitan environment that is Miami. And that is, this is a small town. This is a small town. And if you are involved in the political process in any way, shape, or form, you are probably going to have constant contact with different people. Now, that doesn't mean I'm saying who's right, who's wrong. What I'm saying is that I don't think it should be surprising to anyone that if you are in this process up here in Tallahassee, chances are you are going to have constant contact with people who are also involved in the process. Basically, you know, this is a town that has about a couple hundred thousand people who live here. But in terms of people who are actually day in, day out involved in running state government and involved in making decisions and involved in trying to influence those decisions, you're only talking about a few thousand people. And it's the same people who are also involved in statewide campaigns and are involved in the activities in the political parties. So what I'm saying is I think it would be difficult for anyone to keep a job in the Florida Senate if they are working for the Senate Majority Leader and not have communication with the budget chairman. I mean, we can talk about, you know, did these things happen? Did these things not happen? Obviously, she says they did, and he says they didn't. But I'm trying to just draw a distinction here in terms of how small a town this place really is, and how, and some would say maybe that's what contributes to potential bad behavior up here, is because in fact Tallahassee is kind of cut off, it is kind of insulated, and, you know, and kind of like people just kind of come up here and things happen, and secrets seem to stay secret up here.
And how hollow that rings throughout the state, if anybody wants to offer that up as a defense, Gary, and you know that as well. But let me ask you, to that point, you know, the governor was here in Miami this week calling the situation a distraction for the Senate. And as we mentioned, you know, the time is ticking. The senators and representatives are back in Tallahassee next week for a committee week as they prepare for the 2018 legislative session, which begins in early January. It's early this year, so we're really about about a month out before the gavel falls. The Latvala scandal has been significant but isolated to this one powerful Republican senator. I know that there's rumors and innuendo, more to drop. If the governor calls this a distraction, is he referring, do you think, Gary, to just the Latvala story, or is there something more?
Well, I think in that particular instance, he was responding directly to the comments, to the new information that had come out this week relative to Ms. Rogers and the fact that she had stepped forward and had decided to come public. And you know, to the earlier point that I was making, well, why did she say she went public? It's because she said, look, people kind of are saying things about me. They're saying things about my husband. They've already kind of inferred that they thought it was me. So I'm coming forward because because in fact there is all the rumor and gossiping going on.
Right.
Mm. I mean, as for other things that could possibly happen, there are things that I don't know what's going to come out, and I don't know what's not going to come out. I mean, and the fact of the matter is, let's just roll back the clock here to the. To what the House of Representatives did. The House of Representatives, under Richard Corcoran, when he came into power, they changed their sexual harassment policy over in the House, okay? Mm-hmm. They changed it to put very ironclad language that made it clear that a employee, that a legislator, if they had any kind of romantic relationship with any kind of employee who worked for them, that constituted sexual harassment. Mm. Now, I'm going to surmise that the House did not make that change in a vacuum, that mm-hmm. they were responding to things that had happened.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying to you is, could there be other things that finally come out and are exposed as this national conversation has you know, spread across the land and entered so many different areas? I think it's possible.
I'd say it's a safe bet. And the number to join the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Give us a call, because right now we're also asking Gary Fineout of the Associated Press about this revelation, Gary, that over the decades in Florida, at least $11 million has been paid out in taxpayer money to quietly settle these sexual harassment claims among state workers, in particular at the Department of Corrections. Can you tell us a little bit more about this reporting that taxpayers have footed the bill for these claims in Florida for quite some time?
Yeah, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but I think it's important that people should understand is that the state is quote-unquote self-insured. So whenever there's anything that happens, it's the state that ultimately has to decide whether or not to settle a case and how to deal with the defense. So as you might imagine, in an enterprise that has billions and billions of dollars, there's a lot of lawsuits and there's a lot of claims filed against the state. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's everything from, I don't know, a turnpike truck hits a car on the turnpike and the person says, well, I want my car. So the state tracks all of this. And given everything that has been happening, the Associated Press, and along with a couple of the news organizations, just went to the state and said, well, we know you track the payments that you make related to lawsuits. So in this particular instance, how many have there been and how many payments have there been made so that we can get a total? And the Department of Financial Services, which is run by the Chief Financial Officer, they basically took that and was able to bring the information back and said, okay, well, this is what we've come up with. Now, I want to stress that when we say some of these lawsuits were sexual harassment, others were in the range of what was called a hostile work environment.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest areas of payment was lawsuits from nurses who worked in the Department of Corrections. And basically what they contended was the Department of Corrections allowed inmates particularly to engage in behavior with the nurses, and I frankly just don't want to go into detail because it's the allegations are that disgusting. But the department was ignoring their complaints and their concerns about how these inmates were treating them, and so because they felt that their supervisors and the people in the department were not heeding their complaints, they filed a class action lawsuit. And there was a few other lawsuits on top of that were other nurses. So that was a big percentage of it.
And let's go to some calls for you now, Gary. Let's go to some calls for Gary Fine out of the Associated Press as we talk about the reporting that's uncovered $11 million paid out in taxpayer funds over the years to settle sexual harassment claims here in the state of Florida. It's 305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup from anywhere in the Sunshine State. We're going to go now to Becky in Boca Raton. Hey, Becky, good afternoon. What do you think about all this?
Well, it's shocking and confusing, but the bottom line is if our politicians, our lawmakers are settling these disputes without us as taxpayers having full knowledge, that's totally wrong. I don't want to see my tax dollars going to that. I believe that they should pay out of their own pocket. And I think that we need to go back and really check up and see who's paid what. And I don't care if they're in office or they're out of office. They owe us the money.
Thanks for that. Yeah, thanks, Becky. What about that Gary Fine out? Shouldn't the perpetrator be somewhat liable for these payouts?
Well, I guess it's a policy determination. I mean, I think that what you see is that in a lot of these cases, one of the ones I highlighted involved a mid-level supervisor at the Department of Health who had been accused of making all sorts of improper comments and talking about a sex life and talking about women and everything like that, and that the woman who raised complaints felt that she had been retaliated against by bringing in complaints. Now, I think the issue is that these workplace situations occur there, and then, you know, I the lawyers that I talk to who represent these complaints, they say that the state is usually when they first go to them, the state like just says, we're going to fight it and we're going to make you take it to court. And so what happens is eventually you get to court or you get a jury verdict, and then when you get a jury verdict, a lot of times the state then negotiates a settlement to end the litigation.
That is Gary Fine out with the Associated Press. Gary, let me just get this in here because we got to let the folks know you are listening to the Florida Roundup statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. Gary Fine out with the Associated Press.
All I wanted to add real quick is that the $11 million was a subset of approximately $74 million that had been paid out in regards to all sorts of employment claims. In other words, beyond sexual harassment, there was racial discrimination, age discrimination, things of that nature. So over the course of a close to 30-year period, there was 2,100 lawsuits and $74 million paid out in terms of all types of workplace situations.
I want to bring these two things together, Gary. The reporting you've done on these settlements, this $11 million that you highlighted in your reporting, and then, of course, the scandal around Senator Latvala and the legislature. That's inside the Capitol, of course, with a sitting elected senator. The settlement details that you received, the Associated Press looked through and analyzed from the state going back 25 years, did any of those touch a sitting legislator?
Not that I was aware of. I think that we found one payment by the legislature in the late 90s that involved, no, you're not talking about legislators who are still there at this point in time.
Right.
And in fact, that one wasn't even about a legislator. That was about a staffer in the legislature complaining about another. I mean, the most infamous case that we do have is, of course, the one that you mentioned earlier, which was former Representative Fred Lipman and a staffer were accused of sexual harassment of a legislative employee. And in that one, that one's really, you know, that captivated the town back in the early 90s when that came out, because it didn't become public until a grand jury got a hold of the settlement and released it and the details were made. Mm-hmm. So in terms of legislators, in terms of current legislators, no, not that we're aware of, I'm not aware of any payments at this point in time. But I think the situation with Senator Latvala is, there's a process and things are going to, you know, theoretically come out in relation to that. As we all know, there was another senator who abruptly resigned earlier this year,
Senator
a Democratic
Clemens,
senator
yeah.
from Senator Jeff Clements from Palm Beach County. And while that wasn't an employee, there were questions that immediately became raised about, why was the senator engaged in an affair with a lobbyist? And, House Speaker Corcoran point blank raised the whole power dynamic question as to, the fact that this was a person who was a lobbyist who depended on their living, having goodwill with the legislature.
Well, these harassment allegations are coming out in a giant wave throughout every type of business and in state houses and in the halls of Congress, because there's so much pent-up anger about the power imbalance in these office dynamics. And most often it's a man with more power than a woman. We're seeing it in Congress, and there's outrage about the confidential settlements that have been made via taxpayer money on Capitol Hill as well. So, Gary Fineout, before we go to break, you're continuing to cover this with such excellent reporting. You said there's a process for Senator Latvala. He is still officially looking at the governor's mansion, but certainly this scandal has impacted his prospects there. Can you take us through the process as it moves forward? What can we expect next?
Well, there's kind of two things going on at the same time, sort of the same time. The Senate hired a law firm to look into the allegations that were contained in the initial article from Politico, which had allegations from anonymous women, six different women. Okay, and so that's
and just 30 seconds left, Gary.
And that law firm will produce a report, and that will go to the president, and the president has to decide what to do with it. Simultaneously, we have the one complaint from the one employee that will go to the rules chair. The rules chair will have to make a decision as to how the committee is going to deal with it and whether or not they need to take it to the full Senate for action.
Okay, and we'll continue to follow it. Always great to have you on the Florida Roundup. Excellent reporting out of the state capitol. Gary Fineout with the Associated Press, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
This is the Florida Roundup.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition here on your radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Good to be with you this Friday, Tom, and with everyone around the state. Well, a week from Monday in a San Francisco court, oral arguments will be heard in a lawsuit pitting 21 kids against the federal government. They are suing over climate change. Yeah. And one of those children is a 10-year-old boy from Indy Atlantic. His name is Levi Draheim. Levi is part of the lawsuit that was filed back in 2015 that the Trump administration wants thrown out. But the case is moving forward, while at the same time, local governments here in Florida are taking active steps to deal with the consequences of climate change. And Tom, they're already happening.
Yeah, certainly there are. You could look no further than South Florida here where I am. Miami voters just less than a month ago, Melissa, approved borrowing $200 million in bonds to pay for pumps to help dry out streets faster after it rains and to help raise low-lying roads. Miami Beach is spending $500 million on higher streets and pumps in hopes of keeping the seas at bay, literally in Biscayne Bay, and not on some of the roads and parking lots and buildings on the backside of the barrier island. And further up north, between where I am and where you are, Melissa, along the Space Coast, Satellite Beach is one of the communities keeping its eye on the higher seas. Courtney Barker is the city manager there.
We believe that in about 40 or 50 years, you'll see there will be areas of the city with standing water. So those areas will either engineer our way out of it, like, where you see Miami Beach actually raising roads, or we will retreat.
Rise or retreat. Wow. Well, right now we welcome Levi Draheim and his mom, Leanne. They're residents of Indy Atlantic. That's in Brevard County, just south of Satellite Beach. Also with us, Nancy Shaver, the mayor of St. Augustine, and WMFE reporter Amy Green. Let's begin with Levi and Leanne. Thanks for being with us, Draheims. Levi, you're 10 years old. Why'd you decide to join this lawsuit?
Well, I decided to join this lawsuit. Like, our minister at our church, he told my mom about it, and then he kind of told me about it. And so my mom kind of asked me if I knew what climate change was. And so I'm the kind of kid that likes to be outside all the time. And just after the hurricane, our whole entire street was underwater. We had to drive through a lot of water to get to our house. And it was just on our street and a couple streets over. And so I just kind of like being part of something that kids my age and older like to help protect our environment. So it's just kind of nice to be part of a lawsuit with mm-hmm. other children that like to help prevent their environment from being destroyed.
Levi, it's Tom Hudson. Could you explain in your words what you're suing about?
So I'm suing the U.S. government for violating our constitutional right to a clean, sustainable, livable planet. So we're just trying to, like, raise awareness and also get the government to take action to help our environment and prevent this climate change.
Wow, Leanne, you're Levi's mom. He's the only child from Florida in this lawsuit. And of course, Florida's the state that's got the most vulnerability to rising seas.
Yep, we live really close to the beach, so we can see the effects just in our daily life. And when we go to the beach and when it rains a lot, we see it right out our front door.
And you're hoping that you can get a favorable result, obviously. What's the next step, though, in the lawsuit?
Well, the kids are going to San Francisco. The government is still trying to prevent this from going to trial at all. And so the Ninth Circuit is going to hear our arguments and their arguments about why we should proceed with the trial.
Wow, it's a fascinating way to go about looking at this issue. And already, though, in Florida, local government leaders aren't suing, they're acting. Like Mayor Nancy Shaver of St. Augustine, known as the nation's oldest city, a beautiful historic coastal town. And Mayor Shaver's with us now. You've already made quite a few changes in your municipality to look at the issues of sea level rise. Can you share with us what you've been working on?
Yes, it's been, I'm just so excited to hear that young people are really aware of this. What we started a couple of years ago, we did a sea level rise study. We actually just received 2 weeks ago the final results of multiple steps. So we have a formal vulnerability analysis. But before we received that, we already started acting. By the year 2030, 2035, we know our wastewater plant as it sits right now will not function, and people need to be able to flush their mm-hmm. toilets. So
basic concern.
That's it's our job as municipal leaders is to make sure we deliver the basic services people have a right to expect. So we have made some progress in other areas. We just installed, I'm pretty sure we've got them all in now, backflow preventers in one of our most vulnerable neighborhoods, Davis Shores. Those are really referred to as kind of duct tape solutions for sea level rise. It stops that storm water, that sunny day flooding water, from flowing back into the streets.
So, Mayor Shaver, it's Tom Hudson. How much money have you spent on these preparations?
The backflow preventers that I just described were about $800,000. Now, we're a little tiny town. We have 14,000 people. We have an annual budget of $50 million. We were able to get a matching grant from the State Water Management District for those backflow preventers, which mm-hmm. was a real plus for us. And you've raised, I think, the key issue. This is a very expensive infrastructure issue for cities to deal with, particularly small ones.
Better to be proactive now than wait till later?
Absolutely. And you have to start. You absolutely have to start. And I will tell you what I want for Christmas. We are number one ranked in our county for a FEMA mitigation grant for a pump station, which is huge for us. It really helps stormwater in our downtown area. So that's what I want for Christmas.
Get the pump through the chimney, maybe, right there.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. You are listening to the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition from Florida Public Radio. Let me bring in environmental reporter Amy Green from our sister station in Orlando, WMFE. Amy, what are you hearing from Mayor Shaver and from Levi and Leanne, residents in Brevard County, just south of Satellite Beach, which you visited recently?
Well, I think the Dreheim family, you know, St. Augustine, Satellite Beach, you know, I think these are good examples of a trend that we're seeing in a state that is showing, you know, where state leaders are showing little leadership on the issues of climate change and sea level rise, like what we're seeing from the Trump administration. You're seeing individuals, you're seeing municipalities take this issue up on their own, and you're seeing the issue being dealt with from the ground up rather than from the top down.
The leadership's coming from those who are already being affected at the local level, it sounds like.
It's our job. I will say that I met recently with our state delegation, and there's real receptivity. I gave them our final report. Resiliency is at least on the radar screen, which is good.
Levi, we're almost out of time, but do you want to live along the beach when you grow up? Are you worried that that might not be possible for you once you're an adult?
I would like to live by the beach when I'm older, but like I love playing on the beach. It's like one of my favorite places to be during the day. And I am worried that it's not going to be here, or if it is here, then it won't be the best quality. And so I just want to be able to play on the beach. I'm worrying about my house because like flooding and stuff like that is happening on our street. But I would love to live on the beach.
I would love to live on the beach, too. I was just thinking as you were talking that beach may move a bit, and your house is definitely, definitely vulnerable. It is that question of how much can we adapt? How much will we wind up retreating? But the beach will still be there.
What about that question here? More than 1,000 miles of coastline in Florida. We sell sunshine and sand for hospitality and tourism. The risk can be significant in the next 50 to 100 years.
I think it's more than significant. It's the heartbeat of our economy.
And so, Amy, how about that response from state regulators, from federal regulators, for that matter? We're the third most populous state, 27 congresspeople, plus two senators.
That's right. And sure, the risk is very real for communities like St. Augustine and Satellite Beach. And, you know, certainly I wouldn't want to speak for community leaders like those in St. Augustine. But it is possible for these communities to move inland. It is possible for these communities to, you know, flourish despite the change. And it's just going to take preparation. And that's what we need to see.
Except for a historic city like yours.
Absolutely. We have, our business is that we are the oldest city. We are history, and that history is at huge risk. We can't move the Ponce de Leon or the Castillo de San Marco inland.
Leanne, very quickly before we wrap it up, this has been a whirlwind for your family, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has.
Well, we'll continue to follow this issue as we do regularly here on the Florida Roundup. Climate change and sea level rise in Florida. Tom Hudson, it's not the first time an activist group has used kids to highlight an issue by making kids the leads in a lawsuit. It's not the first time, and it won't be the last.
No, it won't be. And as we mentioned, the oral arguments will be a week from this Monday in San Francisco. The arguments about the Trump administration's effort to try to get this particular case thrown out. And one of those named as a piece of this lawsuit there, Levi from Brevard County in Florida. That is our program for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Jason Zabka is our technical director. Our music, Melissa, is composed and performed by the Miami musician Aaron Libos. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. We'll be back next week.